this is based in a paper which appeared recently in the archive. You have the reference. And what I'm going to discuss here is, sorry, should be. Yeah. Better now. Okay. I'm going to discuss how the assistant consisting of quarks and gluons, like the ones produced at Rick, and next year probably at CERN also. How can we discuss something like that from the point of view of the ADS-CFT conjecture, which is a conjecture started by Maldacena some 11 years ago, in which originally he considered a theory which was in its four super young males, which is it is a conformal theory with only adjoint matter on it, so it should be modified somehow in order to include the phenomenology that we are observing at Rick, in which flavored degrees of freedom, I mean freedom, degrees of freedom in the fundamental representation is observed, is compatible with
the experimental data we have.
So, a first step to include flavor in a theory like N equals 4 super young males was performed by Kurtz and Katz in a famous paper in which they included flavor in what is called the top limit. So, Kurtz and Katz, in which the number of adjoint degrees of freedom, NC, is sent to infinity. Well, this is because of the original conjecture by Maldacena, with the quantity lambda and the top coupling keep fixed. So what these guys proposed was to include fundamental degrees of freedom, but in what is called the Quench approximation, which means that NF is kept fixed. So from here you can see that this quantity goes to zero. I can't do it, sorry, I mean, I have a small letter. Okay. This approximation here means that they are considering a theory where no quark loops are included, and in that sense we say that the flavor are not dynamical. This work was further improved because this is done originally at t equals zero, and it was extended to finite temperature by considering a geometry of black DFT rings. And several studies all over this year extended this system, for example the thermodynamics of the brain paper by Rob Myers, Robin Thompson and David Mateo, studied in the Quench approximation the effect of flavor at finite temperature, and assuming additivity of thermodynamic quantities they could compute corrections to the entropy from a theory which is N equals 4, plus some corrections of order NF over NC. This we could do in the proper approximation, but you cannot go further than linear order. What I'm going to present here, this work, is a construction which allows us to go to the called Bayesian approximation, which is opposed to the top limit here in the following, NC is again sent to infinity with this quantity keep fixed, the top coupling, but now the quantity related to the flavor degrees of freedom which we keep fixed is this quotient. This allows us to write an expansion in terms of this. This allows us to have this quantity that is finite and in fact, can be greater than one. And so this theory effectively includes quark loops into the calculation. I'm going to present a work which is going to take into account the effect of flavors up to second order in a function parameter that basically is given by this quotient here. So I can go to up to second order. So I've seen that further effects from the results that were already available to us in the literature. So the outline in the talk is written up there. First of all, I'm going to explain some problems that one of the action of the theory that I'm going to write just now may have some problems, and then I'm going to see how we use the so-called smearing technique to get rid of them, and that will allow me to choose an ansatz that is appropriate to find a solution. Appropriate, I mean that is possible and doable, find it. I'm going to discuss a bit this solution and its regime of validity. And once I have it, we'll do some physics with it, and we'll calculate thermodynamic quantities, transport coefficients like viscosities, and also I'm going to talk about the energy loss of protons through the plasma and how the effect of flavor accounts for the jet quenching parameter of the drag force.
Yes, sir.
So, well, I'll discuss this in the regime of validity state.
Because you're doing.
Yes, we are working in the planar limit.
So, NF over NC is greater than 1.
NF over NC is not going to be greater than 1. In fact, we're going to have an expansion problem, which is going to be the top cut.
I'm sorry.
But sure. Yeah, it will become clear later. That's what we're going to write is the usual Q being supergravity action for the heat bracing over setup plus a sum of NF and this embrace, which are described by the usual BDI plus Vestumino action. Now, what problem are we going to have? We are keeping this quantity fixed, and we are not anymore in the Kafka approximation where you can send, where you can disregard where NF basically can be very small, and you can decouple the flavor brackets of freedom. So this is going to give us problems coming from the BDI part. One of the problems that can appear is based in a paper by Rafa, Yao, Safir, and Green in the 1990s that says that as these probe grains are codimensional to objects, the presence includes a deficit angle in the dimensional transverse space. So there is a limit in the number of flavor grains that you can add if you don't want your transverse space to be given as. So basically, what I'm explaining in the paper is that this quantity has to be roughly less than 12. Another, even if we forget about this problem, another issue with the BDI action concerns the flavor group, which is U and F. And this means that the effective cutting that open strings ending in the D7 brains is given by quantity that can be very large, and in that case it is known that the DBI action that doesn't work, and you need to correct it somehow. And the last issue that we are going to have is that having these open brains localized in the transverse space is going to give us the process of motion forces that are represented by RAC deltas. And this, in the equation of motion, means that we are going to have partial differential equations with non-trivial dependence on angles. Something that those equations of motion is really a mess, and I mean, I think it's not doable at all. So the idea to
So you're going to work in something like an abelian approximation, which allows you to write it as a sum of dvi?
I'm going to see how to get rid of this problem, and it will cure this other two. So, what Katz did was consider these seven brains which are extended in the Minkowski space, in the radial direction, and wrap S3 inside S5. So basically this is represented by saying that this is an S5, and that in the case of master brains, they are all sitting in the equator of S3. This was not appropriate for what I'm going to say, so I'm going to withdraw it. Well, now this is the transverse S2. So, S2, and all these seven brains are sitting in a given position of this S2. Our technique is going to take into account that now we have a large number of paper brains. In fact, we have, you can see that, goes to infinity. So what we are going to do is separate them, distribute them in the whole S2, in the whole transverse S2, such that now our distribution is homogeneous in this transverse space. So with this, our sources are not direct deltas anymore. So we are going to get rid of the whole angular dependence in the process of motion, and we'll have just a binary system of coupled differential equations, which may be solvable, maybe not, but at least it's not tractable. Also, when we are doing this, what we are doing is that this problem will be solved. This procedure effectively breaks this Abelian group into a Abelian group, answering your question here. Meaning that now our effective coupling is going to be given by this quantity divided by R squared with R, where R is a typical dimension of the geometry we are considering here. In the supergravity approximation, this quantity is sent to infinity too. So this is a small number, and the VDI actually doesn't have this problem anymore.
What does mirroring mean on the CFT side?
Sorry?
What does mirroring mean on the gauge theory side? What do you mean to the gauge theory?
The gauge theory. Well, you are turning on you will turn on to new things that are due to operators, that one of them breaks the conformality of the theory, whereas the other is a combination of the flavor degrees of freedom. I mean, I will talk about this later, I will write the dimension of the operators and so on. Okay? Also, as now our distribution of flavor brains is distributed homogeneously in the S2, and the equation that gave this bound here are not applicable anymore. So this study here doesn't apply to this specific system. So we don't have to worry about this problem either.
Can you explain that? Why it's not applicable?
I don't know the exact details because I haven't read that paper. The only thing I know is that the equations of the action on the dilaton are not the ones in the vacuum at any point. So So, and this boundary relies on that.
That means it was a local analysis. So you find just there is a depth tangle. But I don't see how it works here. Why that's not the issue anymore?
At that point, I'm not sure. I mean, that end up getting its completeness because it appears in all the talks within the modules. That's very nice. That's a lot of.
Can you explain again what is Alice code?
Sorry?
Can you explain again what is Alice code?
This R square. And the R is the radius of an internal dimension of your system.
A process involving some of these brains will give you basically the effective number of brains that take process and that take that affect one of your process is given by the density of brains you have there, which is given by this quantity. So instead of having all the NF brains interacting there, you only have this effective number of brains, which turns out to be small. Well, it's in units of alpha prime, a square root of alpha prime. I mean, you have here an alpha prime.
But this is the same type of smearing that Carlos Nunez.
Yes.
Okay. So in that case, this.
Okay. Yes, it's actually the same mark. Okay. And for it's going to be the final temperature. So how this smearing procedure works in some mathematics here. For example, if we consider the restomino, which is basically given by an interval where this is an I form. This is promoted to a three-dimensional interval given by the following. We have here this element. So this is.
Oh, let me rewrite it. And I explain now what all this means. And so this is a 10-dimensional integral where we are introducing this two form, which basically is the homogeneous, gives the homogeneous distribution in the transverse S2. With this, we recover all the isometries of our compact space, which is an S5, or being more general, it's a Keller-Einstein manifold. But I'm just giving the example of an S5, which is simpler. So here we distribute them homogeneously in the angles, and we divide by the appropriate volume of this manifold here. And the number of NF brains is given by, appears here, because I normalize this function to 1. What is this function? This is an effective number of flavor brains in the energy scale in the radial direction. So you have here your radial direction, and you have a mass scale. Let's assume that you have, for example, in supersymmetric case, embedding given by R cube error. So R cube marks your mass. And this function has to be zero at energy, at radius lower than RQ, and has to approach 1 at energies much larger than RQ, meaning that this radius affects all the brains are effectively taken into account. In the middle, it's going to make some strange profile. It's going to have some profile that one has to calculate case by case. And it's normalized to 1 because I've already taken the factor out of the integral. This is somehow clear. So, for example, if you are considering massless brain, where this scale is set to 0, you will see that, and you can see very easily that this P of R is just one everywhere and has no R dependence. I mean, this is just a description of the massless brain, or massless quark. So you can do this. I mean, there are several papers where they calculate this function. Most of them are done by Francesco Di Gatti and Angel Paredes with Cotroni also. They calculate this in Plevanov written theory, in the Katz and Katz's mirror case, and so on before. So let me, if you want to say a little bit more about this, let me write this as minus P7, a two form which I call omega times P8. So omega includes all these factors here. I'm going to tell how to determine this PR. So basically, the brains, each of the brains is described by two quantities, as one of some parameters and the coordinates of your space, and of two. If you have, for example, if you have just a homeomorphic embedding, one of this is the real and the other is the imaginary part of your condition for the brain. So the way to construct this omega to form is the following. First of all, you write what are the orthogonal planes to these two conditions. So this is given like this. So this will give you the submanifold of a single embedding. Then what you have to do is multiply this by a symmetric preserving factor. I mean, this form to satisfy the isometries of your manifold. So here you are multiplying by a density, which is basically angle of your parameters. It will give the distribution that is homogeneous, like in the transverse tool there. And after all, what you have to do is just get rid of your parameters by adding them all. So once you know F1 and F2, F1 and F2 are the two conditions in these cases that define each of the embeddings of the every singular brain.
For example, in the Katz and Katz case, you have two angles, which are called tau and chi, let's say.
Yeah.
So one of your conditions is this can be F2, and the other is the matter space, or the quasi. So you have two simple cases. Of course, you have to write conditions that are that reflect the isometries of your manifold. So the Katz and Katz cannot be written in this, unless you smear it before. This is done in one of the appendices of the paper. So from here you can find these two forms and obtain that function over there. Also, what I want to say, with a resuming term of this form, basically, what you see is that it will source a F1 form which satisfies the equation of motion, if I'm not wrong. So we see that the smeared brains act as a magnetic source for the F1. Is this clear?
Okay. So get rid of this. So once we have done our mirroring and we got rid of all the angles, we can write an ansatz, which is only radial. But before that, I'm just going to give some basic, not so basic geometry. First of all, I'll say that in the spaces we are considering, the DQ brains are, as usual, at the beginning of a collabial cone. So this is a collabial, these are the DQs. Which, because of rigid flatness, can be written as a cone over Sasaki Einstein and manifold, which is this part here. Thank you. I mean, depending on the details of your Calabi-Yau, you will have one theory or other. For example, if your Calabi-Yau is just Euclidean six-dimensional space, what you are going to have here is going to be an F5, and this is just the usual U2n=4 super young years. For example, here you have the conifold. Then the Sasaki-Einstein is P11, and this is Plevanov written theory. I mean, and this is just this is well known. And what is also very well known is that any Sasaki-Einstein metric can be written as a U1 fiber over a Keller-Einstein manifold. Plus DT, where this A is related to the to this base by simply stating that it's true. No, it's true. Well, this is the Keller-Einstein form of this manifold. This is just a geometric. This is the our fiber coordinate, which is well, it has some important. I mean, it has some properties, but I'm not going to discuss them. So, for example, if you take these two examples, the Keller-Einstein that correspond to these theories are in this case CP2 for the five sphere. For the P11, this is true for us. So a lot of geometry there. I'm writing this because I want to write my ansatz for the metric in the following way. So my ansatz for the metric is going to be some function that depends on R times a factor for the time that will give me the properties of a black hole plus dx squared plus the radial component. This is a constant, this R, it's just the usual length of your internal manifold. So I'm going to write this as squared as the Keller-Einstein part that I just erased, plus another different function for the fiber. This is one of the more general things we can write inside the smearing, within the smearing procedure. The only thing we've done was defining the radial variable in a certain way, such that here you can see there is no independent function. So once we have the sensors for the metric, we can write also the answers for the other fields appearing. So for example, we will have a file form, which will be as usual the 1 plus, and by the means of dual, the five form of the five dimensional manifold, which is, I'm writing it as 5, sorry. And with this, I mean, this is a Keynesian manifold that can be the S5 sphere in the case of n equals 4, or can be the T11 in the case of 7 of Witten. I'm writing this because I'm going to find the equations of motion that are independent of on the geometry I'm using here, as far as this is as I'm considering as a Sakian-Einstein manifold. So each time I write X5, it can be a 5 sphere for n equals 4, if you want to think of it like that. For the one-dimensional form I have, yep.
The 5 form?
No. Well, it's a constant, it's the one form. And I'm working on that's a normalization times this result.
And the fact that this is a constant means that we are considering massless favors here. If not, here it would appear that of our function I talked about before. But in our case, if you consider that case, then you have to consider every specific manifold here, because this is not general anymore. It will depend on its geometry. And also, of course, we are going to have a running dilaton that is going to give us some Landau pole at some radius. This is a very usual feature in the 3D7 cases. And so we will find a scale, which is given by the. Yep.
DF1 is basically given by QF2. It's the condition to have a consistent with Sasaki-Einstein manifold. A consistent U1 fiber with the Sasaki-Einstein manifold we are considering.
So we are going to have a scale, which is a physical, is where the dilaton is going to diverge. And so we are going to define everything up to another scale, which I call R star, and we'll have to set it by hand. And we will consider that our solution is valid in this regime only. So to do this, it's going to come next. So any more questions?
With this fiber, I mean, you somehow we had a three-dimensional manifold that we're wrapping and then averaging over, but somehow the fiber gets picked out as a special direction in space. Mm-hmm. Do you have an intuition how these sort of fits together?
I don't have any. I'm sorry about that.
How exactly is the wrapping occurs?
Hmm?
How exactly is the 7 brain wraps?
The 7 brain wraps X3 inside this manifold.
But normally the S3 is not there, right? So for example, in T11, the S3 is one of the S2s in Kali-Einstein
days.
And
yeah, sure. For example, in T11, you have two spheres and the fiber, mm-hmm. And yes, you have one brain Wapping one of the persistent completely localizing the other. So, so yeah, you are right. It's wapping this.
So it wraps the fiber in some kind of surface that's orthogonal to the.
So it's sensitive to this fiber. Yeah, it has to wrap the fiber. Yeah, it does.
What do you think
it's I'm not sure how in this one.
Okay. Then my question is going to be more difficult because there is a confusion here. But so we have presumably, at least as I remember from Carlos' discussions, that the smearing that he's doing is a supersymmetric smearing.
Yeah.
Now, how do we know that the instance we turn on the temperature that all the seven grains want to collapse?
Well, you can do some miscalculation and you see that it is, you can say that. Mm-hmm. And you see that everything is fine as far as you're considering massless embeddings. I mean, once you consider the massive embeddings, you have problems with the DVA action and the smearing procedure. You have to be more careful at ending here.
Well, I guess, so before, what I'm saying is that before you turn on the temperature, the seven grains weigh mutually BPX.
Yeah.
So now once you turn on the temperature, how do you know, did somebody compute the potential between them and show that there is no potential still? Right, so all your seven grains, at least, you know, in the case of S5, they had a transverse. They were wrapping S3, mm-hmm. and they had a transverse S2. And so they were uniformly smeared on S2. Maybe at finite temperature, a proper configuration would not be a uniform smearing on S2, but actually all of them localized at the point. How do you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that show up in the thermodynamics?
Sorry?
Wouldn't that show up as an instability in the thermodynamics?
How do you know? I mean, if you haven't included the mold that produces instability, there is, as far as I can see, there is never the mold included. You have to compute it separately.
Yeah, I mean, we were just relying that the results were sensible, but we didn't make any calculation of stability of the system.
Do you know anybody did
analysis
of this type?
At finite temperature.
Well, the issue, as far as I understand, is only at finite temperature, because at zero temperature, the system is supersymmetric.
Yeah.
So you don't know if such has been done?
Yeah, we were just relying that everything gave a sensible result and there were no problems in thermodynamics or in...
Oh, but you will never see, problems. You know, that's... Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
Is focusing on this temperature is more than that?
Well, you could say that there was an isometry right before. That's why, you know, you put it anywhere. And so presumably the isometry is preserved by the temperature, so maybe nothing will change. But I would still like to see, you know, kind of the computation of a free energy of a smear configuration and a configuration where all these seven grains are collapsed at the point.
But the question is, did it survive happening before the analysis?
I don't see you include that mold.
No, but I think he's asking, you're making the assertion that at zero temperature, the smeared system is supersymmetric. And so, question is, how do I know that's true?
Yeah, it is.
Well, there was analysis. Carlos did some analysis.
For the D3D7?
For the D3D7.
Okay.
So and there was a lot of, yeah, I think that's as far as I remember.
Okay, so what's the interpretation of this scale here? Well, it's basically giving us the UV scale. And what we are going to see that this is just an Wilsonian approach is given the scale at which a UV completion of the theory is needed. So when we calculate physical quantities, we want to express everything in terms of IR quantities. So we expect that we are going to have corrections of order some power like this, where this is given by our scale and this is basically given by the radius of the horizon. So I'm going to talk now about how to build the solution. And for that we are going to use the supersymmetric solution, which was from Kant. This paper.
So there is another scale in the problem, right? So there is a temperature. In the problem, there is another scale, temperature. So why that's, for example, could you heat up the system above the Landau pole?
Could you heat up the system above the Landau pole? I mean, if I cannot get you in your you know, validity of the solution is not, I mean, that the solution is not valid. As far as you have a correction radius that is order of the Landau pole, then you don't have room for.
Right, but I want whatever I do. So maybe I will not have an interpretation, but I guess I'm going to say something about this later. How does. If I look just at the thermodynamics, and normally, so you have a naked singularity in the geometry, which nobody likes. But one way you can try to do is to hide it behind the horizon. So I guess my question is, even though this naked singularity has a UV interpretation, is there any obstructions of hiding it behind the horizon?
Behind the horizon.
In other words, is there any obstructions in the geometry in such a way that the temperature would be, above the Landau pole scale?
I don't think about what we discussed in the paper.
But wouldn't the string coupling be huge just outside the horizon? So how would you trust your solution?
I mean, the solution would not work at all. And the string would be in the sun.
First, I can, that's when I put a horizon right next to the Landau pole, but I can put it much, much higher. Is there a problem with the solution of this type?
How is
it's the curvature asymptotically small.
So what is happening to the string coupling? So at the Landau pole, the string coupling is huge.
And then as you go outwards,
it decreases, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. What does the solution e to the phi look like? Does e to the phi have a simple pole in it?
I think so.
But then wouldn't e to the phi be negative on the other side of the pole?
Probably.
Okay, so it doesn't make.
So that, well, if that's really what's happening,
then
okay. So writing the supersymmetric solution for the diagram.
It's kind of funny because you expect the other way around, so you just string to go to infinity instead to zero and kind of change the sign. Unless you have in mind that it changes sign by going through infinity.
Right.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's simple form. Okay.
So we can express it like this in a strange way of writing it. I mean, this solution is exact in this row coordinate, which is related to my radius coordinate in some manner. But I don't mind for what I'm going to write. This is suddenly this is the and I have defined this parameter which is given by this quantity. and the phi star is just the Dirac evaluated at rho star, which is the corresponding or is real coordinate here. So we see that this diverges the lambda pole, which is basically given by this quantity. So yeah, like you have everything on zero and you have problems. If we want this condition to have a well-defined solution, then this accounts to consider this parameter here being much smaller than one. Now, what is this condition here? Well, this is you get a star, and if we write the even in terms of the aspect of cutting, the upper star is nothing but the volume of the three-dimensional manifold that our brains are wrapping divided by 16 by the volume of the five-dimensional manifold of cutting defined at this scale and over Z. And this is going to be our expansion parameter. So we will find a solution.
What is it? Lambda star?
Lambda star is nothing but 4 pi GFC. Kind of tough coupling are defined at the direction evaluated at the R star. It's related. Afterwards, we're going to express everything in terms of the lambda H, which is basically given by 4 pi evaluated at the horizon. This is our higher quantity and the one that will make the horizon the solution. So the boundary conditions we use are, so first of all, regularity at the horizon, of course, always boundary conditions in post. And the other one is that at R star, our metric at finite temperature basically coincides with the metric at the very same scale in the zero temperature case. So we are saying that we are far from the IR here. This has a big problem because for the GDT, we will find that this is the usual expression, whereas in this quantity one. So we are going to have this power of RH over RH over R star to the fourth. But this is nothing but this power here to the fourth. So we are going to in all our solutions power like this at the very end, we are going to disregard them. Not consider them. This is just effect of a possible of the ultraviolet in our infrared theory. So with this, we can find a solution. It's not very far. For example, it is the usual R squared over 4. So, 4, this is the factor. And for F, S, and phi, the solution is given as a power series in this factor here. So we give it at second order, and it's written in the paper, and it's a best expression, and it's not what we need. Just say that this is 1 order epsilon star. We don't care about the theories. S also means with S, then have another factor here, and phi given if you see a constant plus corrections higher order. So we see that in the unfavorable case, we recover just
Blake ES5.
I missed something. So I thought you said that you're going to find a solution to order some star square.
Yeah, I have these plus. I mean, I can't go ahead.
Oh, I see. That's what you meant.
But,
I thought,
but I mean, it's in the paper and it's just number seven. I want to use the first one.
No, doesn't matter.
This is our solution, and we want to know if it works in some range of regular variables, considering that you have to define them in a catalogs only up to this scale have to be much less than the number code. And in fact, the hierarchy we want is something like this. And we say that our solution is here. This one is by construction, it's within the satisfied, provided epsilon star is small, which gives which says that basically our Taylor expansions for FS and phi are valid. But also, coming from the Virato, you can see that there is a condition that we must control, which is basically this one. If not, our solution is thin defined, which implies that this portion here should be much greater than that. That's not that bad, because basically what we are saying is that I'm copying it again. Provided this is true, you can always find a regime for R star in which everything is true. So the solution is well defined for some value of R star. And you have a range to choose. Also, another thing one has to say is whether the Veneziano limit is well behaved. And it is the usual suppression of what we have. Right, like this. This limits, and also number h, which is defined like that, we need it to be greater than 1 to suppress alpha prime corrections. The solution works as far as you're considering something like this, which can be done consistently with also this solution, because it has factors of n, f, and c, and lambda h also. If you want, for a realistic regime of where n, f, and n, c are free, okay, it's not much greater than 1, but so it's okay. The quantity to find this one is more or less 0.24. So it seems like even the realistic regime, the Veneziano limit, is compatible with a solution of this kind, provided you are not close your eyes a bit with the corrections to square gravity. So once we have the solution, we can do some thermodynamics with it. And we can define, for example, the temperature as the inverse of the period of the Euclidean time, or calculate entropies, the entropy on with the dimensional, with the usual dimensional area. For example, what do we have here? Yeah, something I forgot to mention, sorry. Is that our extension parameter but evaluated at the horizon, which is the infrared value we want to use in our solution, is related to the one evaluated at the UV, and this quantity. And this. So when we compute the temperature, we can come back here
And what we see is that if you vary the temperature and keeping your UV fixed, you find this equality, which is very, very nice. One is just saying that the running is coupling, the coupling is running. It's a way to say it. Here, T is your IR scale, and the epsilon is proportional to the coupling. So, interpretation of the formula is that one. And for example, for the temperature, you can see that is given by this result, take a call the usual result. That's always recovered. Because we have calculated them, because the equations of motion are more part than we weren't able.
Another interesting quantity, the entropy, and with this I mean just the entropy over the density, entropy density, which is given by p to the 5 n squared p 3. This was 3 for power 3 dependent, the volume of the 5-dimensional manifold. So at first order, we have a gram. Then we have a quantity that is 1 epsilon 8 over 2, which is the one that was found in thermodynamics of the brain. And then we have another contribution, which is new, at second order. And what I wanted to say about this. Yeah, here we recover an old result, but we are doing it just calculating how the area of the horizon is increased by the new degrees of freedom of the theory. So everything looks pretty.
R H to R star.
Yeah, we are creating from R H to R for the
free energy.
You are from R to R star. The thing.
Are you really computing the free energy? Or are you just using the first law of thermodynamics to get it?
Is that in the large term, this integral goes like 1 over R squared. So when you integrate, you get a power of R, RH over R star. And we are disregarding these quantities because and we're there. This is basically this quantity here. Yeah, this is in all the thermodynamics.
But you've not added any counter terms in your analysis.
As a counter term, you use the supersymmetric solution.
Okay, so you're saying you're just subtracting from, you're taking the difference of two solutions, and in this way you can get the free energy.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is an issue here, which is how do you know that the Landau pole doesn't get shifted by temperature effects? That's usually, in other words, how do you know? So Landau pole defines your scale at which it introduces you a scale in a series. The series is not conformal anymore. How do you know that when you do all this thermodynamics and all that analysis that you keep that scale fixed?
Well, I don't think it's fixed, but it's given by terms that we are discarding by powers of. Yes.
Well, we can talk to you. Can't you identify the Landau pole where the Dilettante blows up? See, typically, it's a subtle thing.
Just because
of
time, which you can
So, therefore, you can calculate the free energy, and you get one expression, and maybe it's not perfect. And I'm writing it on the. You want me to write paper? And for example, from the free energy minus the temperature pressure, where the pressure is defined as the free energy. For the energy minus the temperature pressure over 54, this is a measure of running out of conformality. And we'll see that form. It's a quantity here, so it's a geometric factor, matrix order, matrix square. So we'll see that form massless. Again, we see the non-result that for massless forms, the running of conformality is given by second order effects in the flavor. This is also seen in the speed of sound, which basically there is 1/3 1 minus 1/6 square plus correction. Or also if you want in the calculation of the holographic central charge, and this is in the program I have expressed on here, sorry for that. Also one can calculate the viscosities, and this is a work still in project, but we think that the usual elements is still over one over four pi of orders. I mean, you can calculate this with the membrane equivalent, and it gives you 1/4 pi. That's of course correction. And also we are trying to compute it in the and reducing to a five-dimensional system and doing perturbations of the metric, and it seems that this still holds and it's not unexpected since we are not including either curvature terms in our action. One interesting thing we are trying to check also is what happens with this factor here, which and for the moment we think that it is true that is equal to this quantity here. But we found some problem with the calculation.
What is that?
We have to,
What is that?
This is about viscosity over the shear viscosity.
Oh, that's zeta, okay.
And we think that this holds, but we have to repeat the calculation because we found a problem in the way we were doing it. Now I wanted to talk about energy loss of quantum, but I'm going to be very brief, out of time now. So there are two main mechanisms in which one can describe the phenomenon of energy loss in a quark gluon plasma, like the one in RIG, where you see the suppression of the jets. One is the calculating the jet coefficient parameter following a prescription by Wiedemann and Rangaiopa and Liu. And if you do the calculation, you see that the effect of flavor in degrees of freedom in this quantity is to enhance it. So Q and flavor 1 plus the positive corrections in other. This is good because the river correction is below the experimental experimental value for the quantum parameter. I think it's something like 15 squared m, and the n equals 4 result is around 4. This correction we plug on some realistic numbers. Well, realistic, and you have to be careful with that because we are in this approximation, and also we have an inverse force to be done in this theory, not a GCD view. I see the correction shifts this value to something like 5.2. So it seems that addition of flavor and breaking of conformality, which is an effect that appears here, both effects appear, help to enhance the value of the quantum parameter. The other possibility is to consider the drag force, also with the drag force, in the final result we find that it's also enhanced by the presence of flavor in the medium. So that's those are our main conclusions of the talk. Thank you.
I guess there are questions.
I have got a naive question. Is there a CFT where you're allowed to take NF and NC to be large, which does not have a lambda code?
Okay, if there are no further questions, let's have a look.